Welcome back to By Any Means Necessary on Radio Sputnik here in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Eugene Perrier, here with Sean Black. And as always, we're your guide to connecting the political, social, and economic movements shaping. And we are back here turning our attention to the island of Haiti, and we are very happy to be joined for this conversation by Kim Ives, who's the editor of the English section of Haiti Liberté. Kim, thank you so much for being back with us here on the show.
Thanks a lot, Eugene.
Now, Kim, Haitian President Jovenel Moïse has replaced the Haitian National Police Chief, Michel Ange Gédéon, with his former number two man, Normil Raymond. And I believe this comes within the context of some tension between Gédéon and Moïse. So I was wondering if you could sort of begin by telling us why it's relevant for the police chief to be replaced in this way and what the connection is here to the broader political situation in Haiti.
Well, Michel-Ange Gédéon was at odds, really, with Moïse over a lot of the demands Moïse was making on him to use the police more aggressively, not just against protesters and demonstrators who have been in the streets speaking out against the corruption in Haiti, which has reached new heights under Jovenel Moïse, but also with just attacks on his political opponents. And Gédéon himself was trying to be some kind of professional, we could say, trying not to get caught up in the political struggle in Haiti. But this became the reason for his downfall, really. When his term was up on August 23rd, Jovenel Moïse basically chose the number two, a fellow called Normil Raymond, who appears to be somewhat of the same sort of quote-unquote professional policeman. And we'll see. He's just an interim chief at this point. But we, you know, have been watching closely the struggle between Gédéon and Moïse. And so his dismissal or his non-renewal is not really a huge surprise.
Yeah. And Kim, we had you on the show, I believe, a little earlier this year, talking about a pretty wild situation, honestly, in terms of mercenaries, some of them from the U.S. In Haiti, basically trying to help with the theft of millions of dollars from the Haitian bank. And so when we talk about the struggle between Gédéon and Moïse, how was that dynamic sort of caught up in that mercenary affair?
Well, I thought that was really one of the most telling episodes of it, and one that since we were down there covering that closely, got to see sort of firsthand that the president put huge pressure on Gédéon to release these mercenaries simply through the pressure of his officials. And these seven mercenaries, again, and you can read about this on the Haiti Liberté website in the article about Gédéon's dismissal, and also in the piece we did back in March with the Intercept on the arrest of these seven mercenaries. Jovenel had his people call Gédéon, basically browbeat him, trying to have him just release these seven guys. And Gédéon refused, to his credit. And he said he can't do that. He said that has to be done through the state prosecutor's office, through a judge. And so it was really quite a standoff between them. They ended up doing an end run around Gédéon, going to the chief of the police station where they were held, and they were yanked out of there. So it goes to show that in that sort of chaotic situation in Haiti, it's fairly easy to undermine even a police chief who did not sign off on these guys being whisked out of the country via the U.S. Embassy's direct appeal to the head of the police station where the seven mercenaries were being held.
Yeah, and Kim, I'm wondering how much of this is sort of caught up in general institutional issues with the Haitian National Police. I was thinking about back in 2012, I believe, when there was a murder of a police division inspector, Yves-Michel Bellaflor. and everything that was sort of swirled up in that. So, I mean, how much of this do you think is just sort of endemic to the PNH as an organization?
Yeah, well, the PNH has really been sort of second fiddle up until now to the UN peacekeeping force, which has been in the country since the U.S.-backed coup d'etat against Aristide in 2004. First, there was the MINUSTA, the UN mission to stabilize Haiti, which was changed, had a name change, basically, to MINUSGIST in 2017. It went from being about somewhere between 10 to 20,000 soldiers to being about 1,500 policemen and women. And now that force is going to be retired finally in October of this year, October 15th, the MINUSGIST will come to an end. And so for the first time in 15 years, Haiti will finally have its own police force in charge. So a lot of this struggle in the police force has been really around the fact that it will be the principal armed force in the country, as the Constitution demands. So I think there has been a great deal of struggle within the circles of the Haitian government and the UN overseers over who is going to run this police force.
I see. Yeah, because I wanted to ask about that, because your article in Haiti Libertaire's English section about this points out just that the UN occupation forces will be leaving soon. And so it really seems like you're saying, that there are folks jockeying for position within the National Police Force to see who may lead it. And because I was really wondering what kind of impact the PNH becoming the chief armed force there could have on the people on the island. But it seems like that would basically be contingent on who's at the head of it.
Right, exactly. And I don't know much about this Normile Rameau. I interviewed Pierre Espérance of the Haitian National Human Rights Defense Network, RNDDH. He said that Rameau seems to be a pretty stand-up guy and is some professional. But I do note that he was based in Washington for a couple of years. It was some kind of exile sometimes when you're sent up to the embassy in Washington. But that could also mean he got some pressure there and, you know, from U.S. authorities, deep state officials, et cetera, may have had him out to dinner or whatever. So it's hard to know exactly. Generally, the U.S. has always gone for whoever is the chief of the army or chief of the police in Haiti, since the army is still fledgling. We'll have to watch closely what happens with Rameau in the next couple of weeks and months.
Definitely. And a little earlier, you mentioned the protests, the mass demonstrations in the streets in Haiti calling for the ouster of Jovenel Moïse. And just recently, Moïse gave an interview to the Associated Press saying that he would respect the findings of an ongoing corruption investigation into him. This is, you know, involving companies belonging to Jovenel Moïse that are accused of stealing millions of dollars of the Petrocaribe money made available by the Venezuelan government. But even though he intends to respect the findings, according to him, he fully intends to serve out the remainder of his term. And so basically, Jovenel saying that even if he's found compliant in this theft, that he still will not resign. And so it really just seems that Moïse isn't willing to budge, to say the very least here, despite everything swirling around him.
Right. Well, you have to realize that his being president is kind of his principal umbrella from being charged. He has immunity as the president, but once he isn't president, he could be arrested in a heartbeat. The situation is very grave, though, and I think even the U.S. Embassy and State Department is probably wringing their hands about the situation. Inflation is at 20%. You have a $400 million budget deficit. This is in a country with a GDP of $9.6 billion last year. I mean, look at the gourd, the Haitian national currency. It's now at almost 100 to a dollar. As comparison, in 1986, when basically the gourd was cut from the dollar, it was 5 gourds to a dollar. And we don't even have a 2019-2020 budget, which in the 2018-2019 budget is about to end. There's been no government since March 18th, when the government of Sayan was removed by Jovenel Moïse's allies in the parliament. And you're supposed to have one-third of the Senate supposed to be elected on October 28th. There's no election in sight. And this is kind of setting it up for January 2020, where the parliament will expire completely, and at which point Jovenel Moïse will be ruling by decree. So he may be looking to get to that point in January 2020, where essentially he'll have free reign. But it's becoming so clear. I mean, this report in May 31st of 2019 by Haiti's Superior Court of Auditors and Administrative Disputes, the CSCCA, essentially found Moïse double-dipped. He had two companies got a contract to fix the same stretch of road, which they never fixed. They got about $1.6 million, and they didn't do anything with it. And so, and even worse than that, they were given money. They were advanced money, even before they had signed a contract, even before a bid was made on the contract. They were given $360,000. So he's really been caught with his hand, as they say, in the cookie jar. And so he keeps saying, oh, yes, I'm going to abide by whatever the court rules, but he's going to stay president, so he can't be arrested on the basis of what they find.
Yeah, and what this all makes me wonder, Kim, when you describe the conditions and how things are becoming even more sharp in terms of what's happening in Haiti. I mean, do you foresee that the U.S. government continues its support of Moïse? Do you think that perhaps there's a thought in some elements that it may be best to somehow remove him if it means a sort of forestalling outright insurrection? Or how do you see sort of the relationship between Moïse and Washington playing out in the near future here?
The problem is they're happy that Moïse can now be used against the government of Venezuela. They're in the OAS. They're voting to say that Nicolas Maduro is not the genuine president of Venezuela. So they've been pleased with that. That's been since January of this year. But the hand-wringing is definitely reaching points of alarm. I'm sure there's some working groups sitting somewhere thinking, who can we get to replace Moïse, and how can we do it without losing control of the situation? Because the revolutionary pressure from below is so great. The opposition parties have been meeting. They just had a meeting this past week out in the area called Papai on the Central Plateau, where all the different opposition groups got together and sat down. The thing kind of broke down in squabbling because one group didn't want to accept the other group's formulations. But there is tremendous pressure, and any change of horses that would happen at this time risks a revolutionary upsurge, which might pop through the cracks, as it were. So, yes, I think the U.S. is definitely worried that the thing could get out of control, especially since Jovenel Moïse is not, it already is out of control. He's not controlling anything. The country is practically without leadership. He has no authority in any realm. And so we're not sure how this will go down. Maybe they'll just try to ride out storm and get to January 2020, which is only 4 months from now, and he'll have a little less pressure, at least in terms of parliament. But we have simply to expect in this coming fall period, generally it's a period when demonstrations will increase, and we're likely to see, especially with all the court and parliamentary reports detailing all the corruption, greater numbers of people in the street even than we've seen in the past year and a half.
Wow. Yeah, and that really touches on my next question, Kim. When you talk about that revolutionary pressure from below in the streets in Haiti and how there's, you know, sort of organizing happening at different levels in terms of different opposition parties trying to develop an electoral counterforce to Moïse, as well as sort of the kind of ongoing grassroots demonstrations that we've been seeing here recently. So according to what you're saying, it seems as though in terms of how the year goes on, we may very well see not only an ongoing instance of continued demonstrations, but perhaps even them growing larger.
Yes, growing larger, continuing, and Jovenel may be shown the door at some point. There is great alarm, in short, about his capacity to rule. Even his former allies, these are sort of renowned mafia henchmen, people like Joseph Lambert, Senator Yuri Latortue, Gabriel Fortuné from the South, a number of others, they're all fleeing the sinking ship, and they're starting to call him crazy. Ido Zeni, the head corrupt politician of Jacques Mel, called him a crazy, I don't know how to translate it in English, but a sweet, crazy guy. So you have even the scoundrels who were supporting him before are backing away from him. So this is a very bad sign, and I'm sure the U.S. Embassy and State Department are looking at that with great alarm.
Yeah, no, well, as they perhaps well should. Nevertheless, really appreciate you as always, Kim, helping us sort through a number of these issues. We're going to have to leave it there for now. We're going to move to a break here on By Any Means Necessary on Radio Sputnik in Washington, D.C. We'll be back. Stay with us.
By any means necessary.